The question, if the UFC won the Demetrius Johnson for Ben Askren trade with ONE FC, is an interesting one. From a pure talent and draw perspective, the UFC obviously lost that trade because Askren didn't really do much. He wasn't really there long. And Johnson went on and is still having a successful career at ONE. He just won the title again, and he's, I'm going to assume, their biggest draw or one of their biggest draws. And Askren is, I don't know, doing stuff with Bitcoin and whatnot, but he's definitely not fighting, he's definitely not competing, and he's definitely not making any money for the UFC. So in that respect, ONE definitely won the trade. But when you look at it from another angle, from the UFC angle, maybe they didn't really lose that much, because you have to consider the situation that Johnson and the UFC were in when the trade was made, and that he was the dominant force in the flyweight division. You really didn't know if the rest of the division was going to develop up to his standard and up to compete with him. He was becoming, I guess, from the UFC's point of view, hard to deal with, because he didn't want to play the UFC game that the UFC requires of many of its fighters. And so he just wanted to fight. He just wanted to win. And he just wanted to be Demetrius Johnson. And with that, the UFC was kind of considering, well, not kind of, from what we know, the UFC was considering shuttering the flyweight division. And a lot of that was because Johnson and his dominance, and that he wasn't a sellable and promotable fighter for the UFC, and he wouldn't play the game to make himself one. And so instead of trying to work with what they had, the UFC, in their infinite wisdom, was going to just scrap a whole weight division. We know now that that was foolish because of how successful the flyweight division has become and how popular it's become and how entertaining and exciting it's become. But the UFC, they didn't really want to be in the Demetrius Johnson business anymore. And because of that, they got out of it. They found their way out by making that trade. So I guess, in a way, the UFC actually won in the long run by getting rid of Demetrius Johnson, because who's to say what would have happened? And I think the flyweight division as a whole probably won as well, because one, it could have been shut down. Two, Johnson could have got the title back and become a dominant champion again, and then we would have had to, well, from the UFC standpoint here, we would have had to watch him just run over people and get win after win after win. So I think the UFC is going to look at this. They might not say this, but I think they're going to consider that they won in this case just because of how it played out in the long run in their favor. And we also have to consider here, the UFC isn't in the business of having popular fighters. So with that, they got rid of what they considered a problem fighter, and now they can say, all right, flyweight division is something we can keep running, and we just run it, and it's the UFC flyweight division. It's not Demetrius Johnson's flyweight division. So I think the UFC won. I don't like it. I would have preferred Demetrius Johnson to stay with the UFC. I would have preferred that, because it would have made, in my mind, for more competitive fights. We would have seen the level of the flyweight division rise, much like we saw it with welterweight when George St. Pierre was champion, middleweight when Anderson Silva was champion, light heavyweight when John Jones was champion, lightweight when Habib was champion, that level of competition. And you were kind of interested and kind of invested in seeing, all right, who's going to be the one to finally figure it out? We kind of missed out on that with Demetrius Johnson leaving. So pure talent's perspective, UFC 100% loss. Overall, big picture, UFC definitely won, at least in their minds here. Former UFC lightweight champion Rafael Dos Anjos said he's done chasing a title fight. He just wants to have more or less fun fights against longtime fighters. And I'm all for this. I think this is a win-win. The UFC, well, first of all, the fighter wins because they're going to get what I guess would equate to a veterans division if this happens. So Dos Anjos will fight folks like Jim Miller, who are not on the downside exactly of their career, but they're not going to be back in the title mix. And so if Dos Anjos is saying, I'm not going to chase the title fight anymore, I just want fun fights, entertaining fights, fights that I am taking for the pleasure of fighting and for the pleasure of competition, that's a win for the fighters. And Nachos Dos Anjos here. That's a win for other veteran fighters that are kind of in that same space. And there are pretty many of them in the lightweight division and maybe in the welterweight division. But that group exists in every weight class. And so it's a win for the fighters because it gives them competitive fights, fights that they want to compete in, fights that they want to take. And it's a win for the UFC too, because it takes fighters like Rafael Dos Anjos, who are ranked, and kind of extracts them from those rankings. Because if you're saying, I'm a top 10 fighter, but I'm not really interested in fighting to chase that title and fighting these young guys anymore. I just want entertaining fights against other veterans. Well, if you're saying that, well, then the UFC, they can probably leave you in the rankings. They might not, just because of what your future holds and what you are looking to do as a fighter. But they could leave you in the rankings if they want to. But that doesn't mean they have to match you up against ranked fighters. That doesn't mean they have to give you a route to the title if you don't really want that pursuit. It also means, and I think this is a win for the UFC and for the fighters, it also means that fighters like Rafael Dos Anjos aren't going to be fed to the young up-and-comers who the UFC wants to use them to make a name off of. So you're not going to have these fights where this young stud is going up against the veteran who's on his way down, and the fight's lopsided just in because of the age and the development and where they stand in the UFC right now. You're not going to have that anymore if the UFC goes with this situation. I mean, sometimes you'll still have it because there'll be some fighters who still want to pursue the title, but for fighters like Rafael Dos Anjos here, you don't have to do that. And what that does also for the fighter is it extends their career. It gives them more ability to get paid to fight. And so if they're fighting other veterans, those are more fair fights. They're more interesting fights. They're fights the UFC can sell as main events or co-main events on ESPN Plus cards. That's another win for the UFC. And then maybe in a more kind of a diabolical way, another win for the UFC here is it keeps those fighters out of the other promotions and doesn't let those other promotions use those fighters to build up their brand. And so it's a win there too from the UFC. From a pure business standpoint, if you can't get your hands on this former UFC fighter because the UFC is still taking care of them and still paying them a pretty good wage to compete, well, then that's a win for the UFC. I would caution these fighters though that are interested in this kind of situation, be careful, because it doesn't give you a free ticket to not be good or get to a point where it's not entertaining or it's just kind of sad. So the UFC will still have to watch this, and the fighters will still be in danger of being cut and released, but it won't be what we have today. And I think it's a win for the UFC. I think it's a win for the fighters, and I think it should at least be something that gets explored. I saw the pictures of Alex Bejera, and everybody's saying, whoa, he is huge. He's light heavyweight huge, and that's going to be a problem for Israel Adesanya. When I saw the photos, I kind of got the opposite feeling. In a short fight, yeah, that is going to pose a problem. In a fight that's just a kickboxing fight or a fight that's just a striking fight, yes, 100% that's going to pose a problem for Israel Adesanya. But this is not glory. This is not kickboxing. This is mixed martial arts. And so now when Pereira goes into his fight camp here, he's going to spend, I'm going to guess, a large part of that time cutting weight. And with that, he is not going to be spending time drilling and getting better at the skills that he does not really have. And so if Adesanya, who has improved overall, has improved as a mixed martial artist, has a wise coaching staff with him at City Kickboxing, if he sees this giant-sized man who's probably weighing 220-ish, and has to get down to 185. If he sees that, well, the coaching staff knows this guy's just going to be cutting weight for fight camp, and he's not going to be training, he's not going to be drilling, he's not going to be getting better at the skills he lacks. We're just going to go in there, we're going to try and drain that cardio, takedown attempt, takedown attempt, takedown attempt, get him on the mat, hold him down, beat him up on the ground, hold him up against the cage, sap his energy against the cage, drain that cardio, because his cardio is not going to be good because he's going to be getting tired because of how big he is and how much weight he cut. We know that's going to happen. And then now the fight becomes messy. The fight becomes sloppy. The fight becomes not a kickboxing fight. The fight becomes Israel Adesanya's fight. So while people will look at this size and say this bodes poorly for Adesanya, I think just the opposite. I think this bodes well for Adesanya because I see a fighter who is not going to get better at the skills he lacks. I see a fighter who's going to be just be cutting weight. And I see a fighter that's going to be susceptible to takedowns, susceptible to groundwork, susceptible to his cardio failing. And City Kickboxing, as anything, is a smart camp that knows how to exploit weaknesses and see weaknesses, pinpoint weaknesses, and develop a game plan around those weaknesses. I think that's what's going to happen here. I see people gonna be very disappointed in this fight if you think that it's going to be a high-paced kickboxing fight. I don't think that's going to happen. I think we're going to see a grinding battle that looks to take advantage of the weaknesses and the fact that Pereira is just going to be cutting a huge amount of weight for this fight. Daniel Cormier said that Khamzat Chimaev was the big loser of UFC 278 because with Leon Edwards now the champion, the route to the title fight got a little more complicated for Khamzat Chimaev. I agree with that. I agree that he was one of the losers of UFC 278 because the likelihood is that we're going to see a rematch for that title with Usman and Edwards. Very likely, unless an injury prevents that or something goes totally off the rails, because Usman deserves that rematch because he was winning, fighting a very good fight until that head kick. And while that wasn't a freak occurrence, it wasn't a lucky occurrence, it was something that kind of ripped the victory away from Usman. And Usman has been unbeaten, had defended the title 5 times. So just from the body of his work, he deserves, and the fact that now they're 1-1, he deserves a rematch. And so Chimaev lost that, but he is not out of the woods yet here. There is a chance, and I'm going to go point here at Leon Edwards, there is a chance that he loses at UFC 279. And if that's the case, that is the worst case scenario for Khamzat Chimaev. We know fans are fickle. They love to eat their own. And if Diaz beats Chimaev, this is going to give the doubters, and Chimaev still has doubters, which I don't think should be the case. I think any doubts about Khamzat Chimaev should have been erased with the Gilbert Burns fight and the victory in that fight and how he performed and how he looked in the third round. I think those doubters should have been silenced then, but we know that that's not the case. We know that the UFC has elected to push Khamzat Chimaev, and such people are going to say, that guy's all hype, even though that's not true. I don't think that's true for a second. I might have thought that was true earlier in his career, but now with the Gilbert Burns win, that's gone away. There should be no doubt that this guy is the real deal. But still, there are those that doubt that. And there are also those that are giant Nate Diaz fans who are going to say, Diaz is going to beat this guy. And then when it happens, if it happens, they're going to give you the I told you so. This dude was all hype. He was nothing. He's never going to be anything. And now Chimaev has an even longer path to get to the top of the welterweight division. I don't think the UFC would exactly bury him if he loses to Diaz. I think the UFC is much more forgiving of fighters it has deemed worthy of promotion. And so I think they would probably look at this and say, fluke, unless it's just a dominating loss. But if it happens like he gets caught or he gets tired, well, then they're going to say, well, he was inexperienced and this and that happened and that's why he lost, and he's still on the road to becoming a welterweight title contender and challenger. I think that's what happens from the UFC's point of view. From the fan point of view, I don't think that happens at all. I think a lot of fans are going to be eager to write him off and doubt him and dismiss him, and I don't think that's right, but I think that's what's going to happen here. So Chimaev is not out of the woods. Yes, he was the biggest loser at UFC 278, but he has much more to lose at UFC 279. A loss to Nate Diaz is not going to end his career. It might slow him down on his way to the title from a UFC perspective, but from a fan perspective, a loss to Nate Diaz for Khamzat Chimaev, that would be disastrous, because we know how fans can be, and they are not kind, and they are not forgiving, and they will run over Khamzat Chimaev faster than Dana White ran over Tyron Woodley whenever he had the opportunity to do so. Which brings me to my next point here. What if Nate Diaz wins? What if Nate Diaz pulls off the upset at UFC 279? What if Nate Diaz, in his final fight of his UFC contract, beats Khamzat Chimaev? It'll be chaos. And I'm all here. I'm here. I am 100% here for that chaos. So think about it. Does Nate Diaz stay with the UFC and fight Leon Edwards? Does he just sign right after the fight and say, yep, I'm sticking around. I'm fighting Leon Edwards next. Give me that title. Or, you know, does he say that in the cage? Does he just throw up two middle fingers and walk out of T-Mobile Arena laughing at everyone, telling them, I told you so? Does he talk all kinds of wild smack about the UFC and walk away? Does he make every promotion that's interested in him? And I'm sure the UFC is going to be interested in him if he beats Khamzat Chimaev at UFC 279. Does he make them all come to him, put their offers on the table, and then make them wait until the very last minute to say, I'm going to sign with X? I don't know what happens if Nate Diaz wins. I know if Nate Diaz wins at UFC 279, it's going to be a chaotic scene. I know it's going to cause all kinds of confusion. I know it's going to disrupt all the plans the UFC had. And like I said, I'm here for it because chaos and MMA, they go hand in hand. Nate Diaz and chaos, they go hand in hand. This all could become a beautiful, chaotic scene at T-Mobile Arena on Saturday, September 10th. And I don't have a rooting interest in this for the fighters, but from my perspective, my rooting interest is more chaos in MMA. And Nate Diaz can bring that chaos, and I'm here for it, and I want it, and I welcome it. Herb Dean talked about the alleged cheating in the Leon Edwards fight, and here's what he had to say. Fence grabs are a very difficult thing to deal with in the sport because it's a natural reaction. It's going to happen, but deduct a point. Let's take a look at what a point deduction means in the sport. What does a point deduction mean? What's the most common score that goes to the card? 29-28. So that means we have a one-point sport. For a majority of fights that happen that go to the cards, 29-28 is the most common score. So when you take a point, that means you've taken a win. It's not like in other sports where you have 12 rounds, you take a point. It's a much stiffer punishment in the majority of fights that happen. When you've taken a point, you've taken a win. This part, what Dean was saying, kind of left me disappointed. I didn't like it because a referee's job is not to consider how a fight is going to end or what the score of a fight is. That's not in the referee's mind or should not be in the referee's mind. Referee's mind should be, I am officiating this. I want to make sure it's fair. I want to make sure it's safe. And I want to make sure all the rules are adhered to. That's the referee's job, not to worry about the score. And so that left me kind of disappointed in what Dean said. I didn't agree with it. I thought it was a bit of a cop-out, but Dean didn't stop there. Had he stopped there, I would have had a big issue with this, but he didn't stop there. And I think what he said in the follow-up was much more important than what he said to open. What he said in the follow-up was, to have that balance there, that point, that grab needs to significantly affect the fight, and it doesn't always have to happen right away. Those things are judgment calls of the referee. You're going to say, okay, how many times has this happened? Are there other fouls? Or, hey, even this one time, this guy has spent a lot of energy and I can't rebuild a position in any other way. And so I'm going to choose not to give a warning at this time or take a point. I agree with what he says here. Grabbing the fence when you're just kind of up against the cage, holding someone there, and your fingers kind of relax, it looks like you're grabbing a fence. That's not really a grab in my mind because you're just doing what's natural. Your fingers are going to relax in that position. Holding your fingers out stiff when they're through the cage is unnatural. And it's something that you would have to think about doing in that position that could limit what you're doing, that could affect what you're doing. And so you put your hand in there just because you're so far up against it, and then your fingers relax. That's not a fence grab per se. That's just kind of a natural reaction. And with that, I think a warning, a slap of the hand, that's sufficient there. And so this is where we get into the gray area. Now, if you're in that position and you grab and you kind of, maybe you don't even close it, but you grab and you prevent your opponent with that grab from escaping, from getting a defensive position, from getting out of that grasp, well, that's a different story. Then you prevented something from happening with that. And then that's when you need to consider changing the position or taking a point. Another thing we need to do in a fence grab is if, you know, that fence grab prevented a takedown. We see that often. Well, then That's either a changing a position or taking a point. The ref's job is nuanced. It's a lot of gray areas, and this is one of them. And I think just to say, and this is what Dean said, I think just to say all fence grabs, quote unquote fence grabs, are a point deduction is kind of incorrect. Now, if a fence grab prevented something, then you really need to consider that point or a repositioning. But if a fence grab prevented something, and here's where I'll say the referees are often wrong. If a fence grab prevented something from happening and nothing is done other than a warning, that's a problem. And I think that's the problem we see more often than I just have my fingers in there relaxing and you're not doing anything. I think we see more often that a fence grab prevented someone from getting a takedown, a fence grab prevented someone from escaping, a fence grab prevented a position from being taken, and then all we offered was a warning. That's the issue here, I think. And Dean made a point, but then the point becomes, all right, what are you going to do about it? Don't just warn it. Either change the position or take a point, but don't just warn when it's an egregious foul. And I think that's the biggest issue. I don't really have an issue with the warning if it's not really preventing anything from happening. It's just kind of there. I do have an issue if the warning came when there was an egregious foul. And I think that's where most people have an issue. So we'll see if this complaining about Leon Edwards, quote unquote, cheating results in anything. If anything, I think it should result in what I said here, that you are a little more aware of what's going on and a little more aware of giving positions or taking points just to warn and not do anything when it's an egregious foul. Well, that needs to stop.